So we're back together for another conversation due to popular demand.
Yes.
We have so much to talk about because of what you do and what we do here. And this was born out of us talking to each other over dinner. And I just thought it'd be great. It'd be great if we filmed this, kind of like what we did with Judith Miller last year. So one of the things that we talked about in our conversation was fear.
Right.
Fear. Now, I met Geert Wilders.
I know exactly
you know who he is.
Sure, right, yeah.
And I asked him one question, Geert Wilders from the Netherlands. I saw him the other night at the Milo party.
Yeah.
And I walked up to him and I said, Geert, tell me how you stop people, how do you eliminate fear? Because I think that our country, America, is just consumed by people who are afraid. And the reason that's relevant to our discussion is we talk about journalism.
Right.
And if the legacy media won't do it, it requires citizens. Now, sometimes you catch them on the street corner with your iPhone, something that goes wrong. But there has to be a willingness to go into harm's way. And as Marcus Luttrell said at the convention, fight for something greater than yourself.
Sure.
Your war is here. You don't have to go searching for it. Your people are afraid. I stand among you walking. I was allowed to walk with giants, all right? And now we're looking for the next generation of giants. Who among you will love something more than you love yourself, all right? Who among you are gonna step up and take the fight to the enemy? Because it's here.
I don't see a lot of people fighting for something greater than themselves, even patriots fighting for something greater, because they're too afraid. And they have reason to be afraid. So let's talk a little bit about what fear is and how people can overcome it.
Well, you know, the Wilders reference is a good one. He had reason to fear for his life on a daily basis. He was part of the movement in the Netherlands to expose the problems, the creeping problems of Sharia law and Islamic takeover of the country. They killed Theo van Gogh on the streets of the Netherlands, and they shot him. And then when he said, please help, they took a note, stabbed it into his chest, and they threatened to kill his compatriot. Van Gogh was a filmmaker. He had made a video called Submission with Ayaan Hirsi Ali. Then Ayaan Hirsi Ali is just the bravest woman I know. I mean, she and Wilders had to go into a total lockdown. Then she eventually fled to the United States. And then she was, you know, lauded for her courage and, you know, her ability to speak out for women around the world. And then last year, Brandeis decides at the last minute not to let her be commencement speaker because she's divisive, you know, divisive, however you pronounce that word. That's real fear. Now, what you deal with and what I deal with is a much lower level of fear, but it's a psychological fear. And you've endured it. I mean, you must have had moments where you were genuinely afraid, if not for your life, for your career, for your, you know.
Let's talk about one of those moments.
Yeah.
And then maybe what we could talk about is how do people overcome that fear? Because you've had some experience, I've had some experience. But let's take this from the abstract into more specific. This isn't from New Hampshire. This is up on the screen here, we have a poll worker who has an unfortunate name, I guess.
Lacey Bang, yeah. Change the name, honey.
By the way, the thing about New Hampshire is we have Lacey Bang, the poll worker, on tape. We have Richard Head, the Attorney General.
Or better known as Dickhead.
Dickhead. Right. We've got Richard Tracy, the investigator.
Dick Tracy.
And then we've got Richard Sweat, who is in the Congress up there.
I think you can only move to New Hampshire if you have a funny name. Otherwise, you have to live in Vermont.
Lacey Bang.
Okay, how long do I have had to be in New Hampshire to vote today?
Probably 48 hours.
How long do I have to stay in New Hampshire to vote today?
There's no requirement. You want to vote today, you might tell them that you're with your friend and you're here indefinitely. Sounds like it's true.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
And if...
Yeah, it's not 100% true, but I understand.
But you're here indefinitely.
So we released this video. It shows the poll worker saying you don't have to live there to vote there. It caused a stir.
Yeah.
And we get a letter from the Attorney General, and the Attorney General's first letter says, you know, James, you know, a subpoena might be necessary here. You need to hand over your hard drive, et cetera, et cetera. And most of the time you get a letter like this, you get scared.
Oh, sure.
You call your lawyers.
Right,
You know, the lawyer says, don't do anything that would get you in jail.
Right.
The criminal defense lawyer is fond of saying, don't leave your apartment, James. Because every time I do, there's another issue that can come up. Most people in the situation would back down. What we did is we released another video. And then this guy was making some statements that were potentially illegal, saying he was registered to vote in a place he wasn't supposed to be voting in.
Did you have to vote in Colorado then?
No, I voted here.
Oh, you did? How?
So to vote in New Hampshire, all you have to do is prove a domicile.
Uh-huh.
That's about it.
Oh, so you registered in Manchester.
Yeah.
How did you do that, though? What address did you use?
This one.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
The office?
Yeah, Wendy.
And then what the Attorney General did is they sent us another letter. And you need to cooperate. By the way, this is interesting. The second letter, the paragraph where he says, we are requesting that you cooperate with our investigation. Now, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because the narrative changes to my lack of cooperation. The New Hampshire newspapers can report the subject is not cooperating.
Right, it's failing to cooperate.
Failing to cooperate. Right. Never mind the actual facts of what the people said that prompted this letter to be sent
sure,
to me.
Right.
It's the lack of cooperation.
Well, then you become part of the fake criminal video.
That's cool. Actually, I want to show people that fake criminal video. The fake criminal video. It's all part of a narrative, and but another narrative is how they whitewash with these reports. So we're talking about fear, and cooperate with the investigation. So when you have two letters, and now they're talking about your lack of cooperation with an attorney general of a state, most people would be afraid.
Yeah.
They'd back down. So Veritas decided to release a third video. And this video was even worse than the ones that came before it. It was about people being sent from Australia to illegally work for Bernie Sanders, which is a violation of FEC law.
There it is.
48.
That's the Trump sign.
Hey, all right, let's do it. Are we gonna get the big one or the little one?
You can choose.
How do you feel?
That's fantastic. You dog.
Yeah, it's like an exchange program. So it's so the equivalent of the Democrats in Australia is called the Labour Party.
Yeah.
And they've sent us over.
They sent you over
here?
Yeah. Well, you can guess what happened again. The Attorney General sent a third letter for requesting you cooperate with our investigation. But the point is that every time they came at us, I did an event in New Hampshire, and one of the women had said, how do you handle fear? Because it's remarkable. I mean, I would be scared. I've got kids in school. I've got a husband at this job, blah, blah. And how do you... And when they ask me these questions, they are so in awe, in shock of how anybody could not roll over like a dog.
Well, you know, and I face that too. Virtually every time I give a talk, especially now I'm doing one on my book, to a TW 800 book, Crash, Cover Up the Conspiracy, in which I'm accusing the FBI and NTSB and CIA of major crimes. People always say, aren't you afraid? And I say no, because we started with the notion of Gert Wilder's level of frame, Theo Van Gogh level of fear, which is legitimate and real, you're fearing for your life. The second level is the level you've experienced, that is, fearing for your freedom, you know, because you have been in prison and you have been threatened legally, and that's another level. But, you know, what paralyzes, I think, many of our colleagues and allies is a third level of fear, and that's fear for their reputation.
Fear for their reputation. So there's three types. The first one is fear for your life.
Life, right.
The second one is fear for your...
Freedom.
Freedom.
Yeah.
And the third is fear for your reputation.
Right.
And this is the one that paralyzes people. Why does it paralyze people?
Well, you know, I would, you know, just... We have a shared ethnic heritage. We're both Irish by descent. And then, you know, I grew up in a world where, you know, there are two kind of Irish people. There were the lace curtain Irish, which was a small percentage. And then the rest of us were the Shanty Irish. Now, in the media world, you and I are Shanty. You're Shanty media. But there's a lace curtain conservative media, right? And it's a narrow media. You know, it's the George Wills and the Peggy Noonans and whatnot. And people ask me, why don't they get behind your movements? Why don't they get behind what you're doing? Why don't they report the truth and expose the truth and actually do real reporting? And I tell them they're afraid. And they say, afraid of what? I said, well, they're afraid of not being invited to cocktail parties in Georgetown. And they'll say, oh, it can't be any deeper. It has to be deeper than that. I said, no, it isn't deeper than that. They're afraid of being called a kook or conspiracy theorist or a racist or all the labels they throw at you. Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised how that fear paralyzes these people.
That actually reminds me of that very question. When Rush Limbaugh, the first thing he said to me when he interviewed me was, why don't the conservative movement type support you as much as they do? So right. He was kind of, maybe we'll play that clip right now.
I'm really proud to have our next guest, James O'Keefe, is here. The first question I want to ask you, James, and by the way, welcome to the program. Great to have you here.
Thank you so much, Rush. Great to be with you.
But have you ever encountered people on our side who've let you down, who've said, you know, James, you're making it, you're putting too much pressure on us? Have you had any people on our side ask you to tone it down?
You know, Rush, one of the things you've said that really resonated with me is you said that our adversaries circle the wagons and our allies circle the firing squad. I have come to know this over the last few years in a sort of baptism by fire. People don't know this. When we did the pimp and prostitute videos on Acorn, we had spent our own money to do it, Hannah Giles and I did. And we went to Washington, like Mr. Smith goes to Washington, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, trying to show members of the Oversight Committee. There's a chapter in this book, Breakthrough, where even Republicans threatened to arrest us if we didn't give them the footage exclusively.
Let's go even deeper than that. It's not just to forget the conservative movement types for a second, because to be honest, this is transcending that. People in general in this country are afraid. Yes, for the reputations. They sure are. I mean, right. But I'm talking about the people who aren't even involved in media or liberal media or conservative media.
Just one final point, though, on the lace curtain conservatives. You know, they're preserving this little niche as a lace curtain conservative. To the rest of the media, they're all just mixed. It doesn't matter, you know?
We're all just racists.
Right, we're all
just making a distinction.
We're all just, you know, we're all just Irish. It doesn't matter. Now, but you're right. There's a level of fear among the citizenry.
That's the thing that we've got to somehow deal with.
Yes.
And how do we deal with it?
And I think you do it, and I probably do the same way. As I tell them, there's really nothing to be afraid of. The CIA is not going to come after you. The CIA is not going to come after me or the FBI.
Or the NSA? Or
no, because I don't have... I say the only people who have something to fear, really, are people with first-hand information. You know, in other words, if you were Monica Lewinsky in circa 1998, you had reason to be afraid. If you were Vince Foster circa 1993, you had reason to be afraid.
Citizens shouldn't be afraid to expose things secondhand.
No, because our greatest defense, oddly, is the media's total eagerness to ignore us. So the last thing they want to do is to call attention to me or to call attention to you. The last thing they want to do is to make a martyr out of someone, you know?
But that's assuming the person that does the exposure has to go public, has to do it in a public fashion.
Yes.
It has to put themselves on TV or something like that. I mean, we have people contact me all the time and, well, I would do it, but I can't given my position in whatever.
That's an excellent point. You know, in investigating Flight 800, where you're a lot of people involved or worked for the government at some point, you know, as either FBI, CIA. I've had guys from CIA, FBI come forward. I've had airline pilots come forward, mechanics, people I worked in NTSB come forward. No one from the CIA has come forward, but just about every other branch of government. You know the thing, like the Sicilian word is omerta, which assures a silence, you know? Mm-hmm. In English, the word is American pensions. Pensions silences people in the government.
Now, why is that?
They're afraid of losing everything they've worked for all these years.
But didn't the founding fathers lose their lives, their sacred honor, and their
fortunes? They certainly put it up on the chopping block. But it is the rare, I mean, I know people who've said, the heck with it, I'm just going to go forward. But that, boy, the pensions paralyze the people. I'm just on that gut local level.
It certainly does.
Yeah. But for many others, it's not even that deep. It's a generalized sense that the government is more sinister and competent than it really is. You know, we weren't able to kill Castro. We tried, you know.
Well, when Ed Snowden, Glenn Greenwald produced the movie on Ed Snowden, Citizen 4, I mean, it was very conspiratorial, to borrow a word that they throw it at people, but maybe that's not the correct word. It was just haunting
in
its portrayal that we are living in a brave new world where we can't even talk, we have to write things down. Do you think there was any credibility to that?
Well, I mean, if you're Edward Snowden, you know, and you've turned over...
You're a first-hand source. You should be afraid.
You have reason to be fearful for a lot of reasons.
Right.
And, you know, and you violate the law in a significant way, even if you think your cause is just, you're running risk. Maybe you think they have to be run. But for people like me and for people like you, I don't think there's anything to be afraid of.
Well, that's interesting. Now that because I agree with you. I think that if you double down, if you say, because it's so outside, to borrow an Alinsky term, it's outside the experience of an attorney general to issue a subpoena letter and have the person release more video.
Right.
They don't even know how to handle that. Okay, I'll send you four letters.
Yeah.
They don't know how to handle that.
No, because we live in an age, fortunately, in which that we have certainly in the Western world, and actually in the whole world, we have an incredibly vibrant alternative media that offers us some protection, not all total protection, but that makes it difficult for authorities to silence critics. Unlike even countries in the Western world, don't have, you know, France or Germany, England, don't have that same level of exposure. And I think, to your point, the more public you are, the safer you are.
The more protected you are.
Yes.
Which is contrary to what people think. They think the more public I am, the more dangerous it gets.
Yes.
But in our experience, it's been the more publicity you get, it's always safer.
Yes.
That's counterintuitive to some people.
Yeah, oh, totally. And in fact, I tell a story in my TWA 800 book where just before my first book on TWA 800 came out about 13 years ago, I was walking along the edge of a creek, like it's like a channel that goes through Kansas City. And I wasn't paying attention. I was just thinking this, and I fell in. It was the middle of November. And I was thinking, well, what if I drown, you know? The last thing the national security state would want was for me to drown in a smelly creek in Kansas City, because then I'd become a symbol of some resistance or something.
Right, right, right.
As opposed to some guy who just wasn't paying attention.
Right.
And fell into the creek. And here was what was semi-miraculous. This is November, you know, and I go to climb out, and I have my sweats on and my boots. And the level of the creek is about 18 inches above the water. I can't get out. You know, I can hang on. I can't get out. You know, I tried to throw my foot up, but it's just much too heavy, you know.
Right.
And I'm thinking, this is too ridiculous. You know, I'm laughing at myself thinking, I can't drown here. God, I mean, this would be just too stupid, you know. And then out of nowhere, some huge guy comes by and says, it's like a comic double take. Like, what are you doing in a creek in November? And he says, you need some help, Mac? I said, yes, sure, I do, you know. And the big guy pulls me out. There's no one there, you know. So then I was saved from having to become a martyr for the cause. I'm not eager to be a martyr, but I don't fear becoming a martyr because it's so unlikely. Yeah. And in your case, it's even more unlikely.
So people don't think the way that you do. People think completely differently. They think, oh no, I can't do that. And but where is the bridge? Where is the disconnect? Because this is probably the most important point we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Because if people were not afraid, we wouldn't have the problems we're having in government.
Right.
People would be easy to admit things. People would be easy to be honest. People would be easy to hold them accountable. People don't do that. And there is a fear. And there's a disconnect between someone like you and the people out there in the citizenry who come to events and ask me, do I fear for my life?
Yeah.
Why is there that disconnect?
Well, I mean, there are some cases, like the Andrew Breitbart case. You know, how many people think that he was killed? You know,
what do you think?
I think it was natural causes. I can't believe they would have killed Andrew Breitbart.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly, I'm an anti-conspiracy theorist by nature, and although I'm accused of being a conspiracy theorist all the time. And what do you think? You knew Andrew better than I did.
I think it was natural causes. His family told me that's what it was.
Yeah.
He also had a heart condition, and he was a workaholic.
I mean, he burned the candle at both ends.
Two hours of sleep a night. If I did that for 2 days in a row, I'd probably fall over.
But you take an example like that, and if the people who are inclined towards believing the worst, you know, despite all the stuff, despite all the, you know, I mean, you know, being ignored, and you know, and here I am. You know, with the TWA 800 book, I when I talk to the people in the media, I say, I have the greatest untold story of our time. A story that, if revealed, will dwarf Watergate and its implications. That the U.S. government, on the eve of a national election, decided to suppress a story and subvert an investigation in which 230 people were killed. That's major. That's Watergate on steroids. I hate that metaphor, but it's a useful one here. What I don't want to be is ignored, you know? And that's that's the way they deal with you, that's the way they deal with me, is they, if we have a big story, they'll do their best to ignore it. Now, you've done a good job of breaking through. which makes you even, I think, less vulnerable, you know?
Right.
Rather than more vulnerable. And I remain an optimist because, in this, you know, speaks to the future of the media in general, is because I see the role of the citizen journalist expanding, not contracting. Mm-hmm. I see more people jumping in. The cost of entry now is very low.
Right.
And you, I mean, if proof of which is your own career.
Yeah, you could. Well, even more than it was when I started. Now you can just live stream to Facebook.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you don't need any. There are no barriers to entry, although there are legal challenges with David Delight and what he went through with in Texas.
But those challenges are, they don't want to make Delight too much a martyr either. You know?
Right. Well, let's take a look at this. You know, this is something you mentioned you wanted to talk about as it relates to Veritas, this incident in New Jersey where we planned to go into this school and present a cocaine-abusing health teacher with an award that he is drug-free.
Right.
So I had to pose as a consultant. Now, this is a little NBC News clip to cue this up.
At this point, the chief says no drugs were ever brought into this school, but school security will be reviewed as Project Veritas founder James O'Keefe got into the school pretending to present an award decline, in effect mocking him for his leadership teaching kids to say no to drugs.
This is going into the school. What were you going to say?
I was going to say there's two levels. We're talking about fear, you know, of reprisals, fear of bad things. Then there's another level of fear. And that is, and I think you're a master of this, that you've overcome this, the fear of embarrassment.
Or as you call it,
exposure.
Nerve.
Just nerve,
The sheer nerve, which is, there's fear of, what do we call it? There was fear of your life.
Right.
There's fear of your...
Freedom. Fear of your reputation.
Fear of your reputation.
Right.
And then number four...
Fear of making a fool of yourself.
Fear of nerve. This scene, if you look at this scene here, this is probably one of the hardest things we ever did. The school is like Fort Knox. You got a guy there who, he's a thug, and he knows he does cocaine, and you may get burned.
And he wears Bermuda shorts to work, which makes him dangerous
wears Bermuda shorts to work. He's like, why am I getting this award? I don't know why they give me this damn award. I don't know who this guy is. Who is this guy? Hey, go get the gun out. Get this guy set to the back. So you got this whole thing happening, and...
As a citizen of
accent for Cranberry, New Jersey.
My name is Bill Stern. I'm with New Star Learning, and we're here today to congratulate excellence in teaching, both in physical education and in health awareness.
So, of course, they don't know I'm James O'Keefe. They think I'm some political consultant or something. My heart is beating 100 times a minute. I am scared. I may look like I'm not scared, and I am the type of guy that's an introverted person, so this is not easy.
No, right.
And I'm forcing myself to do it for a greater good.
Yes. And I
nerve.
That is nerve, and that's a part of our conversation. It's the flip side of fear. It's an overcoming an internal fear of getting caught, you know, being exposed to something. And
that's just something you got to flip.
Especially doing what you're doing. In fact, to do any kind of serious investigative work, you've got to overcome that fear. Even if it's making a phone call to someone high up in the government, you know, and fear of rejection, fear of being denied, you know, fear of being turned down.
Fear of failure.
Fear of failure, right. Or in your case, if you're failed here, it would be, you know, you'd be a laughing stock, you know. I mean, you have to deal with that.
You have to, people are going to judge you. They're going to look at you, and they're going to say, "Is this something that you should be doing?" But let's watch this rest of this clip.
And we're here today to congratulate one of your teachers, Mr. Klein, for his excellence in helping you. Today, I'm here to present the New Star Learning Stay Ahead Award 2016 Excellence in Drug Abuse Awareness to Mr. Robert Klein from Howell Township Middle School. Everyone, give a round of applause.
I mean, this guy, if you look at him right here, he's like, why am I getting this award? He's literally like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, I laugh every time I see this. This is really a hoot, you know?
And just so that the audience knows, this is the guy who said this.
Like you come to my room, you come to my room now. I have booze, I have water, know, I have blow at the house, like whatever anybody wants.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, I didn't say that either.
Whatever anybody wants, I have it there.
Yeah.
And I don't mind having it there, like, because it's easy. Because this one guy, he delivers, it drops off.
And then he
blow, by the way, means cocaine. So
blow means cocaine.
And I'm Bill Stern. I'm with everyone for being here.
We want to have this opportunity to give the education as far as health and drugs and all the programs that we run to keep you drug free and get you out there and exercise and try a sport, find something that makes you feel good about you. Give yourself a natural high instead of doing drugs. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Give yourself a natural high, but I got booze blow in the house. You know, and what's the reward? I mean, you know, for doing this, it's almost like people are. Is it worth it? You know, that's the question that people are going to have for you, going through what you've gone through, exposing Flight TWA or a corrupt teacher in New Jersey, who's a hypocrite. By the way, I've met people who do cocaine, whether it's illegal or not, and even those people are like, well, it's one thing to do cocaine. It's another thing to be a health teacher. You probably don't want to be both.
Right. Drugs doing, if you're going to do cocaine, don't do student health.
Don't do student health. They don't mix. Right? They don't mix, but.
And don't wear those shorts to school under any circumstances. You should be arrested just for that.
Yeah, that's.
Well, and that's the question you ask, but it's an excellent question, because when you undertake a project like this, and you in this case, you're looking for a small success. You know, you have incremental successes. And so you're rewarded periodically, you know? But sometimes you're not. Sometimes you fail.
Sometimes you get falsely accused.
Right. Or sometimes you just get, ignored. Right.
Yeah.
You don't break a story. You put a lot of work into it, and at the end of the day, you're knocking your head against the wall, and no one wants to know about it. But there's always an audience. You know, I take great heart, and I'm sure you do too, because when you go out and speak in public, there are always people out there who cheer you on, encourage you. Say, you know, keep faith, James. Don't give up.
Yeah, all the time. Yeah.
And I can't imagine you know, when you're about 30 years old now, saying, you know, I've had enough of this. I think I'm going to take a job at the Washington Post. You know,
it'd be impossible. Once you get beyond once you go to the dark side, it's hard to go back.
As you can never go back. I've been working for myself for 25 years, and I've written 11 books. I've done, you know, 20 documentaries. There's no going back. There's no being employed again. There's no, you know, if you have there's an excitement involved in citizen journalism that is not matched in any newsroom in America. Because you and I can go, it's like we're the first people in an American Creek in 1848, and we're walking down there. All the nuggets are still sitting there. The media have left them there. And we can grab them. And you can be we know other guys who've done women have gone out and found, just on their own, found that great truth. It's like the guy who busted Jonathan Gruber, for instance, I think you met.
Yeah, we interviewed him, the guy that came to our office. Yeah.
Right, and Gruber was the guy who was boasting about how Obamacare was a big lie, you know. There is that reward, that eureka moment, you know, when you find something, like, gosh, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm working with a fellow now who's, I won't go into too much detail, but he's an Iranian dissident, and he discovered a major truth that had eluded everyone, you know? I can't go into detail here, but it's out there. There's still nuggets out there, you know? And the major media, to their shame, don't even go looking for them.
Well, that's a good segue, because I think next time we talk, I want to talk to you about this sort of, how would you call it, dualism in the media? Information streams, and how there are different mentalities, one on mainstream media and one with independent media, and the psychology of it.
Yes.
So that's what we'll talk about next time. Thank you.
Excellent.